Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where family B2B brands go to grow. Today's episode is a special one for me because I'm joined by my brother, Gary D'Elia. Gary's story spans multiple chapters of leadership, sales, family business, adversity, and reinvention. He begins as a standout sales performer, first in food sales and later working alongside our father at D'Elia Associates, where he played a key role in launching and selling exhibitor space for the Plastech trade show. From there, Gary went on to grow as a leader at Appleby Windows Systems, where he eventually was named president by the founder, a remarkable example of an outside leader being trusted to guide a family business. Later, he established Home Performance Alliance, built it into one of the top companies in its category in Florida, battled through extraordinary personal and professional challenges, and ultimately led it to a successful exit. Gary, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you, Ed. It's a pleasure to be here.
This will be fun. Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Early on, you know, from the very beginning of your career, you had a strong affinity for sales. So tell me, what was it about sales that just clicked for you so naturally?
Well, I really think that it all stems from sports. I was heavily involved in sports and football and wrestling, and where winning and losing are measured. And so my goal early on was to become a high school teacher and football coach. But upon graduating college, I needed a job badly. And it was at a time in our history where there weren't plentiful jobs. And it was a challenging time in inflationary times and high unemployment, incredibly high. So even with a college degree, you had difficulty finding work. So in a roundabout way, I needed a job that summer before the school year started. And I had a friend that had got a career at this company in the frozen food business. And I thought, well, having it in there, he might be able to get me a job in warehousing or something like that, you know, to get a paycheck. And a general manager, an Italian fellow, saw something in me that he was determined to get me to try sales.
Okay.
And well, I did it, and I took to it like a duck takes to water. And needless to say, I had to turn down the teaching and coaching job because I was making quite a bit more income than a high school teacher and football coach in those days. And I really felt like this was the closest thing to playing sports. And you were measured by wins and losses.
If memory serves, not too long after, I remember you rolling up to the house in a brand new sports car at a time when I don't think anybody. I don't think anybody in our family ever had a new car.
We
were a used car family, man. And you rolled up in this beautiful white sports car. So I feel like things were going pretty well out of the gate. So what do you think it was about, you know, why, Gary? Why did it just click for you? Like, what was it about sales and that just seemed?
Well, I had good mentors that kind of took me under their wing and felt that I would be a good student, I guess. And I followed their process, and I started to learn that there was more of a science to selling than a psychology, and that if you use certain words at certain times with a prospect, that you could become successful. And they prodded me and pushed me to learn these methods that led me to success. And I was very and I think I also learned that the no sales made the sales, the close, so much more enjoyable. So just like in sports, there's nothing worse than losing,
Right.
but when you win, it offsets, the emotional experience. And that was more important, I think, than the money, to be honest with you. It was the gratification of completing that, that task. And there was a psychology to it, and I had to learn a lot about psychology, and more so than business. And I had a minor in psychology in college, so I did like it a lot. And then I learned how people think and behave. And when you know how they think and behave, you can stimulate that thinking. And I was able to do it very effectively and become a top performer, and quickly became a sales manager because of it. The company would promote you right away if you were good at it and somewhat responsible. And
They must have thought you were crazy after all that when you took your next move, which was coming to D'Elia Associates around the time of the Plastec trade show when Dad, along with some partners, launched Plastec. I think it was back in '86 or '87. So talk about that for a minute. What kind of inspired you to do that, and then what was it like?
Even though I really kind of knew my time at D'Elia Associates was probably not going to be long lasting, because of my strong desire to be independent on my own, so to speak, but I did find an area that he developed, the trade show business, where it allowed me to sell, and we were selling people to invest a great deal of time, money, and effort into having a display in that show. And it was a different kind of sale than I was used to, but nevertheless, I was applying some of the same sales psychology that I had been taught, and it turned out to be effective. And so I continued to do well at that, and we had a couple of shows we were involved in that my father developed on his own. And when he decided to sell them or liquidate those, I felt there wasn't a place for me and any longer, and I had that desire to continue my career in the sales, marketing, and management area.
What was it like working for Dad at that time? Because I know what it was like, when I came along, but that was some years prior. So talk about that for me. What was it like?
Well, my father's leadership style was based on a philosophy of striving for perfection. He was a perfectionist. He was a highly intelligent man, and he just felt that you had to, perform, and that he had, put pressure on us as young people. And growing up in that house, there was always a list of chores or responsibilities, and you never really got used to hearing too much praise, but you knew that if you were chastised less, you probably accomplished the task. But anyway, at his business, he was very similar, and he expected discipline and people to be committed to what they were doing. And it taught me again to have that discipline. And he was a highly creative person, though, and I think that I really took that from that experience, that creativity is and his ability to speak in public and with large groups and in audiences. He was a very effective communicator, and that I was really admired in him, and I wanted to try to follow his tactics and methods. And there was a pattern to them, and they were very effective at motivating people to follow him and to trust his business and with a lot of their budget for advertising, so and marketing. And he was very effective at putting people together. Different personalities, different nationalities, he did it worldwide, not just in this country, which was really amazing attribute.
My observation of if I were to look at Dad and look at your skill sets is, I always felt Dad was a master of relationships and was great at sustaining relationships. So in the context of business development, he was really good at keeping and extending relationships for a long time. I always saw you as excelling at what I would call new business development, creating something when it didn't exist before.
Yeah, we were more in a raw sense of sales, where he was more in the sense as, you know, you had to not only sell, but you had to service your customer a great deal. And I got that from him, which led me to my desire to do more in the next career in that respect.
And what I also, you know, as we're talking, you know, I'm reflecting on is, you know, when I came along, I had a lot of, a lot more tools at my disposal. There was, you know, the Sandler methodology, Dale Carnegie, and a myriad of other sales training and resources. I don't know that that really existed as you were developing your sales skills. I mean, was that really around that point?
Not many people thought that they could go off and actually make a market for that. So the people, though, that you went to work for had that in them to teach that same kind of thing. And I just really enjoyed and was highly motivated. And at the time, it was a time where getting ahead and striving for success and financial wealth, and people were getting into buying real estate because, you know, you could build your financial future. And it was a time, competitiveness, you know, it was a fun time to explore that world. And, challenging, though.
Well, let's talk about the next chapter, because this one is really where I think you made your mark and a lasting mark. So you spent some time with Dad working on the trade show experience. That was divested, and then you found yourself at Appleby Windows Systems. Talk about that for a minute. How did what drew you to that opportunity to begin with?
Well, I was approached by a recruiter, a professional recruiter, and I had a sales management background, and this was a heavily sales and marketing company. However, it was a complete business unit where you were not only responsible for the meeting the sales goals, you were responsible for your lead generation and your you know, marketing budgets, and then your furnish and install the product and service the product. So I felt like to be successful at that meant you were truly a you're running a business unit. It was a
Yeah.
branch of the company, and as a unit manager, it allowed you an opportunity to be more fiscally responsible, financially responsible of the entire unit. And if it was successful, you were successful, and you were remunerated by your financial success as almost like a partnership in a sense, because the profit you would share in that profit of that. And so I learned financial statements and reporting and, you know, how operations and expenses affect your bottom line. And I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And the company spent a great deal of time and effort into sending us to learn accounting, basically, you know, balance sheets and things like that that I never really took a look at in my college years. And I was very fast-tracked in it, and I could apply it immediately to making a good income. And that made it more fun to learn. You know.
I remember that period because I don't think I've ever seen you study and work so hard at learning. Because I, you know, I don't think you knew much of anything about that industry when you stepped in.
Not at all. I didn't know anything about construction or methodology in construction or being a superintendent. So, but I again had good mentors there when I got there, and they recognized I was a good student, and they, you know, wanted to take the time to teach me what they knew, and they were at it for a long time, and I was appreciative of that. But yeah, I told my wife the third day I was going through an orientation there. It was over a period of time, but spending at the home office and with other branch managers. And I told her, I'm not going to make it. I'm going to wash out, you know. And, you know, but I just wanted to prepare her in case I came home early. But, you know.
But it seemed to work out rather well because and a very interesting chapter, because at one point, and this kind of comes back around to family business, whereas oftentimes you see elevation and transition from one generation to the next generation of family. But in this particular case, the founder ultimately elevated you to president in lieu of transferring leadership to one of his kids who were, I believe, active in the business. So talk about that for a moment. That was, you know, that's an interesting move where in lieu of promoting a son or daughter, he said, no, Gary, you're going to be the leader. And what do you think he saw in you that gave him the confidence to say, this is the way we're going to go?
Well, I'd been with the company for some time, 5 or 6 years. And I think the owner and the executive staff recognized my passion and determination to not only comprehend the reporting structure, but also implement the plan, you know, work at it. And to the point where, you know, the company eventually raised the bar as a result of what I had done in a place where I was given the worst performing branch. Of course, when you're a new manager, that's what they give you, not the best one. And so taking that to become the number one branch, you know, got people's attention. And for a Greek immigrant like Norman Kalyan to set aside his desire to see his children, which is very strong desire in that culture. And he came to this country with nothing as an immigrant and built quite a business. And not only that, was very successful in other business ventures as well. But to put that aside was definitely something that was a surprise to me as well. But for a 33-year-old to be offered that opportunity, I absolutely felt that I was not prepared to do that, and I implored him to rethink his decision. But little did I know he'd hired a consulting company to do a nationwide search for his successor. He wanted to retire. Naturally, he was quite a bit older than me, but he had a much different leadership style than I did, a different management style. We really, though, clicked, even though we were generations apart, seemed to enjoy each other's company. And as a mentor, as the chairman, someone I would report to in a different way, it was a good situation. And certainly to give me that kind of an opportunity at such a young age to run a large multi-million dollar organization. At that time, we were in the top 10 in the industry. That's saying a lot in the country, and had made a name for ourselves. Or so it was really a good situation, and eventually led to really successful years as the president and CEO of that company.
And to dial it back, I mean, I kind of do recall that that chapter where you were working with it was the worst performing branch. If memory serves, sometimes and maybe your lesser moments, you refer to them as welcome back, Cotter's sweat hogs, who you were able to motivate, inspire, turn around, and drive to be one of the best performing groups in the company, if not the best performing. So that must have been incredibly gratifying to start that rise.
Yes, it was. I mean, when I got there, the people said, "We're a Class C branch. We're not supposed to do this or that, and we have our role in the world as the bottom of the totem pole," and that just wasn't going to sit with me. So either you got on board with me, or you were going to get off the boat, and that was a style certainly that I had, similar to my father. Either you get on the boat or you get off the boat. And yeah, we drove people that maybe were had m mediocre talents and education or lacking somewhere in their personal life. We were able to motivate them to exceed their expectation in many cases, and then people all of a sudden appreciate your leadership style as they see success for themselves and their families. And that's what was the most gratifying to me about being a manager of any kind at any level, was the gratification of seeing people improve their lives, and as a result of their hard work and dedication and commitment. And I would have remind them of that, that look what we've done together and look what we could accomplish together. And people start to buy into your program, and tough at first, but I was determined to follow their system. And
Certainly took the owner's notice. He caught wind of that, and the rest, as they say, is history. But bringing it back to because a lot of times this does come up on our program where sometimes the successor is a family member, but sometimes the family elects to bring somebody from the outside who is a non-family member into leadership. So, as sort of the non-family member leading the company, what did that teach you about running a family-owned company? Because it's definitely different than if it was a
It's very
executive
important.
actor, so talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, it's very important in that environment to know your place. And it, Norman wanted it to be professionally managed, but family owned. His goal was not to sell his business, or, he wanted his children to be shareholders and to at least appreciate the business. But he recognized that they didn't necessarily have the same desire to be in the business, number one. Number two, to work in the business, and to but he wanted them to appreciate it, and they did. And so I knew that I had to keep them on board with me and be have healthy communication with them. So I always told them what I was doing, even though I didn't report to them. I wanted them to feel like I wasn't autonomous that way and could just, do what I wanted. I wanted them, so via whether it be writing or email or a conversation, I wanted the family members to know that their feedback was important to me. And so we always maintained a good relationship with the family members. And I think that's important. And you have to sometimes humble yourself and grow, I guess, to, but it's, it's not out of politics, it's out of respect. And I think that the owner of the company appreciated that I went out of my way to do that, to make them feel important to me, and that they had a say in some, matters. So I definitely included them. And we would well, and after all, they were Greek and I'm Italian, so we food and fun and on a weekend here and there for events, was certainly enjoyable.
And I think that's a valuable takeaway for any of our listeners is that when those scenarios do come up, and I know of some where they worked out favorably like yours, and sometimes not so favorably, and I think it probably can, boil down to that open door of communication, because when that's not there, sometimes things fall through the cracks or in the gaps, and misunderstandings happen, and the next thing you're the outside leader and you're doing great and you're hitting your numbers, but suddenly you find yourself being cast out because somebody in the family didn't like something,
Has a
was
beef.
never spoke, and it was never put on the table or spoken of, whereas you created an environment where you could always freely speak. The door was always open as far as you were concerned to the family members, even if they didn't have an operating role or a governance role.
100%. And I think that that's good advice for anyone, that you have to go out of your way to include them, because at the end of the day, they own the company and it's on them. And you have to respect that. And I had a great deal of respect for them. And not only that, but they did work with their, they knew their father. So any insight that I could get how to communicate better and avoid some of the pitfalls, I'm sure that they had too. But they would give me some insight, and I could learn from anyone, really, if they had a good idea.
That's
They
a very
were.
healthy perspective for sure. And you made a point there. It was a business and you ran it, and you ran it like it was your own, but ultimately it wasn't yours. And then that led to your next chapter of building something that was your own. And that ultimately became Home Performance Alliance. So talk about that for a moment, Gary. At what point did you kind of say, hey, it's time for me to build something of my own?
Well, I really never had the desire to be self-employed. I thoroughly enjoyed being part of a team. Even though at Applebee I was the CEO and president, I was not the owner. And at the end of the day, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? You lose your job, but you get another job. But when you're the owner, you own it. I mean, you can't just walk away. There's the IRS and other regulatory agencies that want their peace. And so it's not always, there's a lot of pacing that goes on. I realized when I finally did venture down that road, and I guess I felt there was something missing from my career life. I felt like there, it would be like, winning the Super Bowl as an owner and CEO, and I would have all the responsibility if we were successful, and I would have all the responsibility if we were failure. So that was the ultimate challenge now to me. But now all of the fiscal and financial responsibility was squarely on my shoulders. Needless to say, I was a pretty darn good manager, I always thought, and good, motivator people, but pacing wasn't my game. I had to learn how to do that at night because there was always something out there to give you some stress. And as many of your business owners can relate to
Yeah,
me, what I'm
100%.
saying, that there's, and you yourself know that feeling that, and in the consumer side of business to consumer, which we're in, that world is full of pitfalls, and the EPA and other types of audits to make sure you're complying. There's a government agencies, permitting and engineering and architectural committees, and lots of challenges. So,
So Home Performance Alliance, based in Florida, you hit it hard. Things were going great, pretty much out of the gate, and then, you hit a hard chapter in your life. So let's talk about that for a moment. Going through the divorce, when a period when both business and personal life were under tremendous pressure, and I remember that time, and it was a hard time for you. But talk about that period, and what was the mindset, Gary, that kept you going, through that tremendous adversity where it felt like probably the sky was falling, to just push through and power through, because where you ended was far above where you started. So talk about that. What was it like to go through that, and how did you kind of keep yourself going?
well, yes, I went through some a real, personal challenge and financial crisis. I mean, we were in the middle of the night, 2008, Great Recession, as we would call it today. And I don't think my entire career was ever put into that position. And at this age I was at, it was definitely a discouraging moment in my life. When you're sometimes they say when your back's against the wall, you fight harder and you find a way back up. And that's kind of the way it was at that point. I couldn't go any lower, I
Yeah.
have to say. I was told once by a successful businessman and millionaire, he said to me, that kind of encouraged me. He said, you're not really a millionaire. You're not part of the club unless you had it, lost it, and got it back and did it again. And he told me about Milton Hershey, of course, the Hershey bar, that he went bankrupt seven times before he got it right. So there's always hope. Not the way to do it, but that recession lasted a whole lot longer than we all thought. But there was a silver lining, because when I realized this, it was very encouraging, because most of the competition disappeared. And so here is this giant market that I thought was could be the greatest market of all time. And if we could just survive, get through this period, and scratch our way, that good things, good times could be had, you know. And so I just worked harder. And I think going back to my father again, I don't think I could have ever done that had it not been for his motivation and inspiration in my life. There's no way, if he didn't instill in me that kind of discipline and determination, I would never have been able to, I think, overcome some of those obstacles. Looking back, they were pretty amazing on a shoestring budget to start in a one-room office, humble yourself, and then we
And
kept.
to put it into a little bit of context, probably about 50 feet from where you're sitting out on the water, there's a 40 plus foot vessel parked there, your boat. And what's that name again?
Endurance, of course,
Endurance,
and that
yes.
means a lot. It certainly was an enduring period, and that's why I came up with the name. I wanted it to represent the journey that got to that, the ability to be able to do that, I feel proud but also humbled that I had that opportunity again to climb back up. And
But I think there's certainly something in you that's very common to, and you're right, all of our past guests, there's been that moment in the journey that felt like, the sky was falling, the darkest of days, and that compelling desire or intrinsic trait to just endure, to push through, irrespective of the obstacles, and just to power through no matter what, seems to be very common to a lot of the the riches to rags to riches stories like yours, where on the other end is a bigger day, a better day, a brighter day for the family, for the business, and for all its constituents. So certainly true in the case of Home Performance Alliance.
well, and if you go back to the sports analogies, in the match, whatever sporting event, there are periods where towards the end of a game that it's lost, whether it's tennis or wrestling or basketball or football, it's lost. You are not going to overcome the clock and time yet. You have to go out and play. And sometimes you look for meaning out of that play. And I think I took it one play at a time. And that's I'd have to say this the saving grace there is one
And
day at a time.
bringing the sports analogy to life during that same time, which, by the way, has always baffled me. You had so much going on in your life. During the same time, you're serving as a football coach to East Lake High School, one of the premier schools in the region. If anybody follows Floridian high school sports, often in the top one or two in the state in their grouping. And I think some four of your players are currently or did play in the NFL.
Yeah, we had up to five in
Up to
there.
five. Okay, five.
Very.
So talk about that. I mean, were there any lessons or in that period when you were going through a really challenging time that you were drawing from the spirit and energy of being on the football field in the capacity of coach that
Yeah,
was pushing
I
through?
was asked to do that as a volunteer, and I tried my best to get out of it. But a shrewd principal and football coach had just come on the scene to a school that had never won in 20 years of existence. And, I felt, well, sooner, later, you got to give something back to the community. But I think in doing that, it did more for me than I did for them, because you know, it never became more clear to me as a high school football coach, a volunteer high school, that what we do in business is really teach and coach, whether it's administration, finance, sales, marketing, whatever it is. And I made that speech, and somebody decided to write an article about it in one of our leading magazines called The Coach. So I was very proud of that, but I didn't think much of it at the time when I was explaining that. I was at a round table with a bunch of other business owners in my field. So I was very, you know, proud of these young men. We had many Division I athletes, and we went to many championship games and several undefeated seasons. But along the way, there was a lesson for me, because observing the coach, and he's a dear friend and like a brother to me, the head coach, I also learned that I could be humble. I went out to a field where I was, you know, I had many bosses, and I was the lowest level you could be. I was the assistant to the assistant to the assistant to the coach. And I think that, you know, gave me a lot of, certainly I had some fun, and, but, you know, we were at a very high level, competitive level, and seeing the effectiveness of the fact that in coaching in any sport, your players, your team has to believe that your program, that your game plan, that your strategy, that your philosophy is going to win. There's doubters, but your job is to overcome any doubt in the minds of your players, because you can't go out and play the game anymore. So you need to get them to be motivated to give everything they have. And I can recall that there were times in the locker room where they were expressing their displeasure for how the young men were performing. And I saw the change on the field, and them come out. And I never felt that I was there as a strategist or really coach as much as I was a cheerleader. But what's very gratifying is I've been to most of their games at one point as professionals, and being invited to the locker room area is a family affair in this day and age, and I've been invited. And to see them come out of the locker room, though, with all their friends and family, and go to me directly first and embrace me with a hug, and tell me how much they miss me when you haven't seen them in years, and they're multi-million dollar football players, is really gratifying. And I guess looking back, I'm glad I had this experience, and that apparently meant something to them, and that they, and they're very mature young men about it as well, to listen to them on a news media cast, and how mature they speak and well they speak, is a tribute to all the coaches that they were involved in, and certainly in college as well. But it's a pleasure to be a part of that. And even though I got paid nothing for it, probably cost me a lot of money to leave a business, engaged in a business, and then go out and do something else. But during a difficult time in my life, it certainly provided me with an outlet and a sense of pride and success, even, you know, in bad times in my business. So I say it did a lot for me, and I'm glad I did it.
And, you know, at the start of this conversation, your first inclination after college was to go and coach and teach. So
kind of ironic
that you spent, your whole career coaching and teaching, whether it be in the boardroom with the sales team or a leadership team or on the football field with a bunch of offensive linemen or defensive linemen or a little bit of both. What's also interesting is you joined Appleby and they gave you the worst performing group. You joined Eastlake, that was at the time a failing football program. And in both cases, you were part of a turnaround. So certainly, I guess I'm left to wonder, as you were out there on the football field, did you pull any pages from the Appleby playbook when you spoke to the players?
Well, believe it or not, to my surprise, they were very fascinated by my stories of whether it be business or my experience in the game. And they wanted to hear about my day. And I didn't have them all day like a teacher and a coach. And that's what they wanted me for, was to talk to them about life after football and out in the world. And I did that, but I didn't realize how much they would be so interested and inquisitive to ask questions about something that was bothering me. And I would talk to them like, we were, in a sense, friends, and they would ask more and more questions about legal matters, business matters, sales matters, and it was very a good time to they were a pleasure to be with, and
And gave
so
you an outlet too, I would seem. And I think a lot of people underappreciate this. A lot of leaders, we live and breathe our business. We're here all the time. We're here on weekends. We're here late at night and early in the morning. But there's got to be some outlet somewhere, you
it
know?
was a diversion,
Yeah.
and you have to have some diversion, whether it's exercise or, and I guess I thought, well, and some of the employees really saw this as a charitable contribution that we were making, but some probably didn't think that that was fair. Here I am going off and helping something, other cause other than our cause. But I think all in all, the people appreciated it, that this was our company giving back something to the community, and that's the way I presented it to them anyway.
And it wasn't as though, after that difficult period, your bets on Home Performance Alliance seemed to pay off, that you knew, hey, when we get through this, things are going to be good. And they were more than good. If you,
Oh, it was
they there was like
accelerating out of control. It was
yeah.
beyond the, we couldn't hire people fast enough.
So talk about that for a moment, because I think a lot of business leaders, they want to scale, they want to grow, they want that, rise. But I don't know that they always really understand the emotional and leadership toll that comes with that. So, if you were to kind of say, hey, let's have a reality break on that. You had that meteoric growth, that explosive growth. Talk about that, what that was like, and how you worked through that, because that has challenges of its own.
Yeah, 1 minute we were just making payroll, and the next minute we're blowing through 20 million, 25 million. And I'm like, how did we do this? Geez, can we slow it down? And sometimes, but you want to offer people opportunity, and that's so they kind of push you to the next level, and it makes more opportunities for people to grow and learn as the company grows, and you bring more people in to the fold. It does get exciting and fun, though. I think that the breaking records, breaking goals each year became a habit for us, and a way of life. And it seemed like there was nothing I could do then at that point to slow it down, but it had to be manageable because, runaway growth, you're way ahead of the curve when it comes to profit. you're reinvesting the money quickly back into the business for the next level and the next level. And there are challenges with that. And sometimes we did that well, and sometimes we didn't do that well. We let things fall through the cracks, and that's very frustrating when you see something that happened in your business that has a hole in it, and you want to fill that hole and say, how did we get here, and what are we going to do to make sure this doesn't happen again? And it is trial and error too in many respects, but there, yes, we were rapidly assenting, and to the disappointment of our competitors in the areas we were doing business in. So.
There was you told me a story once about an employee, I think a long-standing employee who you kind of knew they had other opportunities. They could have stepped away and probably gone to a bigger company and made more money. And I think you even asked said person, well, why do you stay here? And I think they said to you something along the lines of, well, if I left, I would miss the action. Talk about the action. So it sounds like you built something
Well, when
cultural
you're reading,
standpoint.
when I became a coach in the high school football team, I had to coach the offense and defensive line, and we had so many kids on the football team and so little coaches. And I said to the head coach, "We need more coaches." I mean, I'm trying to do so much, and with not enough help. And he said, "Coach, when we win, they will come." And I remember towards the end, you were bumping into each other with so many damn coaches for every little thing. We had a coach. It was very true, but you got to win first, and then you make believers of everyone, and then they want to come on board. But yeah, nobody wanted to miss out, and some people might have left, but they wanted back in because they saw that, you're winning. And when you're winning, people do want to get involved. And that's when the booster money comes. That's when you can get more equipment, better training facility, better whatever. Same in our business, technology and more sophisticated communication systems and devices to do our installation and construction part of our business, vehicles, all the state-of-the-art things that you want to have, and then you can, acquire those things, and that just accelerates you ahead of your competition. So we were very open-minded about trying new things, not saying, "Well, that's the way we always do it." We never really got into that. I didn't like that attitude. "Well, that's the way we always did it." No, if there's a new idea, we're going to check it out. We're going to be cautious about it, but we're going to check it out. We're going to go down that path. And we were willing to do that. And I think that inspires people too, that they're not going to get stuck in a rut, and that we were open-minded. When AI came around, I'm like, "What the hell are you all talking about?" We started the beginning of the alphabet again. I thought we were in the Z's, it was really amazing communicating with people. With computers, robots, and now that's what I miss, is some of the new things that are going on in the business world right now. It's exciting to read about implementing these things, including in my industry. It's come a long way with some of this technology, and especially in the marketing and advertising area.
For
And
sure.
just when you think that you did it, everything you could do, somebody's got a new idea, and it's exciting times too. Challenging, but exciting.
So a couple of years ago, you elected to exit, and you exited on a high. I mean, the company was one of the top performing in its class in the state, if not the top. It was up there, right? As you look back, Gary, beyond revenue, title, exit value, has your definition of success changed or evolved as you do the look back and look at your journey?
Well, I wish I would have enjoyed the journey a little more. Certainly. And I felt I didn't tell people enough that they how proud I was of them. But they said, you don't win the Super Bowl in business unless you own the business and then sold it or exited the business. And I wanted that Super Bowl trophy so bad in my mind, this imaginary trophy. And lo and behold, after the sale went through, the staff got together and bought a replica. It's on my bookshelf, Super Bowl trophy. Gary D'Elia wins the Super Bowl. So there is a lot of gratification in that. But just like coaches that win a Super Bowl, they'll tell you they're more compelled than ever to do it again. It's interesting, to how that feeling happens. It's gratifying, rewarding, but yet, you would like to do some things differently the next time around, and
Speaking of, last question. So what is next for Gary D'Elia? What is the next chapter going to look like for you, do you think?
Well, that's the ultimate question, I guess. That chapter hasn't been written yet, I guess. I again, I have set aside some of the financial reward to possibly venture back into a similar business in the same field, and maybe do it again. That's kind of out there, exploring that and thinking about that, to build it and do it again, with a underperforming company, perhaps, that
It
they.
seems to be a common theme in your journey, isn't it? Take something that's not working so well and make it a winner.
And in between, I spent some time, I don't know if you recall, as a consultant in our industry, and got involved in not only the retail side of the business, but also the manufacturing side. And we'd go into an operation where an owner was frustrated that their financial success was, their profits were not where they once were, and they would struggle with that, and then finally hire someone to come in and take a look at the business. And I really enjoyed that, finding where is the leaks and plugging them, and then watching it, come back. And sometimes as an owner, we get too close to the business and we don't see what's really happening sometimes. And that taught me a lot in that time, where I was able to go to companies and kind of take over, really, the owner, and send him on a vacation or something like that. And more often than not, they were the problem. They were violating their own policies and procedures for the most part, because I'd say to an employee, "Well, where did that come from?" "Well, the owner told me to try it that way." And, well,
That's
that's
funny.
not right.
Another recurring theme, of course, is an ability to see what's not only see what's broken, but then have the tenacity to go and make sure it gets fixed and fixed
And as a
once.
business owner, we have to take responsibility and say, okay, if we have consultants, which I certainly suggest that people do that, and even vendors and suppliers, and would come in, and I'd want to know, well, what's the latest thing? You know, what's going on? Or I'm struggling in this area. I wanted to hear what they had to say. And you have to accept the responsibility. If you have a leak, you got a leak, and you can't just sweep it under the rug. You have to accept the responsibility for that and then correct it. Take corrective action and take action. You can't, you know, wait for something to happen. And I think that's what was something I picked up along the way from many different
For sure.
opportunities.
For sure. Well, I feel like we could be talking for hours, Gary, which we have. But to wrap this one up, you know, what really stands out about your journey, and I think one of the takeaways among many that you've given us today, is that success is rarely linear, right? It's built through resilience, reinvention, leadership under pressure, and the willingness to keep moving forward, even when the road is hard. Gary, thank you for sharing your story and for being willing to explore both the victories and the hard moments that she.
Well, I want to thank you very much for this opportunity, but I do want to say on a sidebar that how proud I am of what you have accomplished there in transitioning our father's business. And when I saw that 60-year anniversary, I was very excited and happy and proud of you to have done what you've done with that business. So congratulations to you.
Thank you. And I remember on a dark day of mine, I called you up and I was bitching and I said, you know, I don't know, this is crazy. This business is nuts. And you said, well, Ed, why did you buy Dad's business? And in that moment, I said, well, to make money. And you said to me, well, you were stupid. Because nobody gets into marketing if they really want to make money. You should have gotten into financial services or banking. That's where the money is. You got into marketing. He said, maybe you did it because you love it and you're good at it and you've got a passion for it. Maybe that's why. And you kind of set me straight in that moment. And I'll never forget that conversation. You know, you're an amazing leader, motivator, and clearly you've done it time and time again. Again, listeners, we've been speaking with my dear brother, Gary D'Elia, founder of Home Performance Alliance, and one of certainly the greatest sales and business leaders I've ever known. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Gary, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Great. Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at deleonet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.